Welcome to Cow Daily 004. Alice Wolf, mother of swans. See the hermetically sealed from last time crack I've got for you. How's it going?
It's going wonky.
It's moved a bit.
That's one of the things we're talking about today, though.
What, the swan?
Oh, the swan. No. I mean, I've gone wonky, not the swan.
Ah, it is. We're going to talk about mental health and all that. So anyway, on today's live stream, we'll be doing the first bit on mental health, how the political situation affects it, but also winter, the traditional way that mental health goes through the floor. Also, yeah. We're going to be talking about lying bastards. There's plenty of them about, and I think you know who we're talking about. And some that may surprise you. We'll be doing a little mini profile on Lyndon Crosby as well. Also, obviously, Boris Johnson, and a bit on Starmer, but also on how the media treats Starmer differently from you know who, the liberal magic grandpa. I tell you what, I've loved watching Twitter today. There's so many slam dunks on these liberal blue ticks. It's unbelievable who are like crying about how Starmer's been treated. And at the same time, like that this you tweets from like when they've been participating in the smears against Jeremy Corbyn are just flooding the timeline. It's just a beautiful thing. In fact, we may well do like a this you section in the future with the permission of the guy who runs that account, who's great.
Definitely.
Because honestly, I was buckled laughing at one before. It was so blatantly hypocritical. It was ridiculous. How are you anyway? How are you doing?
I think at this point, I'm a bit like that, you know, that horse in the never-ending story. A bit like that.
Weird fluffy dragons? Are they horses?
No, there's a horse in it, the one that sinks in the swamp.
I haven't seen it for ages, mate. I just remember, like, you know, the ones where it's the never-ending story and it's, like, flying and that. I just thought they were, like, some crazy, like, fantasy horse or something.
No, basically the kid's horse basically dies of depression in the middle of the film. It just like sinks in the swamp and like he's like, you know, going, come on, get out, you've got to get out, we're nearly there. And the song, you know, the horse is just like, yeah, nah, I'm all right. I'm just going to sink like down.
Man,
and I think 2 years down the line, that's about where I am now. Yeah.
It's like you remind us of Watership Down or Bambi being capped in the head. Like I'm already being a bit depressed this winter as I'm about to like share with you, and you've really, I was all right, and now you've put us through the floor again, so cheers mate, thanks very much, like all the best.
You know, if you have a goth friend, you've just got to take everything that comes with that.
Anyway, Roberta Smith, tell them about your t-shirt. What's going on there?
Ooh, my t-shirt. Yes, well, I'm not much of a football fan, but I am quite a fan of fascists being kicked in the head. So this is a t-shirt of Eric Cantona's favorite kick back in, well, I think it's just gone the 27 year anniversary of that, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, stop, man. Seriously, I had hair then as well. I remember distinctly.
Yeah, so I couldn't believe it actually when I looked, but yes, so that is the famous le kick. It's also a bit of a standing joke with me and Lady Calstrigen with the le kick on it. It's a really long story, but basically I've got an online French friend who thinks that I can speak French, really? And it's just got so long now, it's far too awkward for me to tell him I can't actually speak French, and he keeps sending me things in French and like.
And I have Google Translate your friend, is it?
It's really not. Google Translate is like kind of coming across like a magical cat in a video game that talks in riddles. It's just like, it doesn't really make much sense. So yes, Le Kick kind of like tied in with that sort of long-standing joke about my inability to speak French or pronounce the word crudite, whatever it is.
comes to something when I'm the cultured one. You really can't speak French, can you?
I really can't.
I mean, I saw you chowing down on a souffle last week as well, so.
So tell me about your t-shirt. I'm liking it.
It's all tomorrow's parties. Velvet Underground and Nico, that album, right? See this? It was designed like it's the album cover, but this was designed by Andy Warhol, and I absolutely love this album. And if anything was going to make us become a heroin addict, it would probably be this album. But I have never listened to it enough, I think. But just what a great album. If you want to go and listen to a great album tonight, go and listen to this one. It's fantastic. And also you get to do Nico impressions, who's absolutely off a block, probably still, if she's still alive, I would imagine. I don't know if she is or not. All tomorrow's parties. And we'll be talking about parties later, but not the good kind. Political parties. I'm going desperately down the Partridge Road.
Well, as we've heard, the two kind of go hand in hand at the minute.
Right, I know, man. Bad news, isn't it? Anyway, before we do any of that, please share the stream, good people. I'll tell you like a Dalek. It really helps if you go to the YouTube channel and do it there and watch this there if you can. That would be fantastic. Simply because we're trying to get the channel monetized super quickly. Actually, there was a guy the other day who said to us, I've put the shows in like a playlist order. But he said, if you want to watch them all at once, you can actually just put like auto play on it. It'll just cycle through and play them. And that would help really hell of a lot. So if people could do that for that would be top. Great tip, mate. Thanks. Really appreciate that tip. So please share the stream. Let's try and get more people involved because it's going to be a good one, as it always is, but it's going to be really good in this time. Also, if you could, please subscribe to the channel while you're there. Help with the algorithm. And I've been looking at the analytics on there and people have been doing it as well. Now, thank you so much. It's like really, it's went up something like 1,000% in a week or something like that, which is fantastic. So like there's upward trajectory, Jeffrey. Why do I sound like fucking, what is it, Zippy? Upward trajectory, Zippy. Oh, no, I am Zippy, aren't I? Bonker.
Oh, imagine us as children's TV presenters, man.
No, we just wouldn't get the job, mate. You've got to be some kind of mad careerist. I read something recently about, like, there's a couple of, like, moderately whistleblowery type tweets from somebody who was on CBeebies at the time, same time as, like, somebody else said in the thread. It was that, you know, that Holly from, who does that thing with Philip Schofield, I can't remember what she's called, the blonde lass on This Morning. That's her. Like, Sado is properly fancier than that, which is a little bit of a, like, a sort of Poundland Rachel Riley and the evil stakes. What? She looks like she fell out the Laura Ashley tree and hit every branch on the way down. Apparently, she was, like, apparently the dressing room at CBeebies at the time was, like, a nest of vipers. Like, it was properly funny. We wouldn't get that there because we're really nice. We're nice people.
We just take the piss out of each other to each other's faces. So.
Yeah, it's to like all of that is to each other's faces and with love. Whereas apparently they were all like, you heard about it. And I mean, we'll remember Philip Schofield and Holly, whatever she's called, like doing the selfie with Boris Johnson leading into the election. They had Corbyn on and they might as well have just like hung him on live on national television, showing your Tory arse there, you horrible bastards.
Yeah. So
get back in the broom cupboard, Philip Schofield, with Gordon the Gopher. Oh, was it Ed the Duck with him? Doesn't matter anyway. Should we just talk about mental health instead of them dickheads?
Yeah, I think we should.
Happy days. So, first question I'm going to ask you is, like, how have you been?
Right. This is a funny one because I think if you'd asked me when we, like the very first live stream that we did, I said, oh, you know, I'm doing okay, you know, like very British and everything. And it's all gone a bit wrong, basically. And I keep, when I'm trying to describe it to people, I'm saying the only way I can describe it is I've gone a bit wonky. I don't like using the word nervous breakdown because... Mm-hmm. You know, that means different things to different people. And also, I really don't want anybody to worry about me either, because, there's really kind of no call for that at the moment. But it's what I've realised, it's stuff that has been building up and building up and building up over the last 2 years since this mm-hmm. whole pandemic started. And there's been lots of kind of causes for it. And you know, I thought I was doing okay, because I was like, oh, you know, well, you know, these people are kind of, you know, they're really struggling. They're in a much worse situation than I am. You know, I've got no real cause to complain, and I've worked in like complete isolation almost. Really haven't been anywhere, hardly. There's been like one or two like little outings into the world in the last 2 years, and that's been it. And I thought I was doing okay. And then it was just like somebody had been like pulling the thread on a jumper I was like wearing, and just pulling it and pulling it, and it was all starting to unravel. And then last week that bit of thread got stuck in helicopter blades and just basically kind of tore off, and I just had an absolute wobble. I've really, really struggled. It's like to the point where I've not been able to kind of get up. It's like getting dressed is a real struggle. Just not wanting to like interact at all, and not being able to concentrate on anything, and making lots of really stupid but potentially really dangerous mistakes as a result of that. I've talked about before, but there's quite a few people watching who might have missed it, is that I've had like an ongoing saga with getting an ADHD diagnosis as well. Probably one of the good things that has come out of this is that I'm going back to the clinic about that, because it's not just a clear-cut case of depression, and it's just, and I have all these struggles which are everyday struggles, and then when I come under stress, it's just like somebody's, you know, poured gasoline on it,
right?
To the point where I'm just not functioning, and as I say, making really stupid mistakes, like, you know, kind of losing my wallet, you know, leaving the cooker on and stuff and things like that. And I've just had to kind of like step back from everything. So that's what I'm doing at the moment, and I do feel like from doing that, like I do feel like the, like things are starting to relieve like a little bit. It was just like, I just needed to be really, really still. I needed there to not be as much noise around me all the time as what there has been. It's really frustrating, because I'm a pretty resilient person as well. I had lots and lots of experiences with depression when I was in my teenager. Since getting a really good round of therapy in my 20s, I've done really well, and I feel like I've, you know, not just survived but thrived, you know, over the last sort of 15, 20 years or so. And so I find this really frustrating. It's almost like, oh God, am I going back to that place? And, you know, we're kind of taught to really kind of fear that. But I think I'm just starting to sit with it for a while and just think about why this is all going on in my head at the moment. And I do know the reasons, you know, And, but I did end up approaching my doctor again.
Good.
Which I was a bit nervous about, because I know there's been loads of stuff about that, people not being able to get appointments and stuff and things like that. And it was a telephone appointment, but I've got to say it ended up being a really positive experience, and I'm glad that I did it. You know, I thought, you know, she'd be really angry with me, you know, when you're in that mindset. I thought she'd be really angry with me, because there's loads of people trying to get appointments for like their physical health as well, and I'm thinking, am I taking up somebody else's time, and should I really be doing this? But I think the point where I rang the doctor was that all the coping mechanisms I have, all the stuff that I've got in place that I've used over the years to try and make myself feel better, just weren't cutting it anymore. And I just felt like the pilot light has gone out in me, and I've been trying to press the button to restart it, and nothing's happening. So
I hear you, man. Do you think it's something to do with the isolation? Like that's the why the pilot light won't light anymore?
Yeah, absolutely. I just haven't interacted with people like in the same way that I've been able to over the, you know, not just kind of socially and everything like that, but, you know, kind of socially isolated and all the rest of it. And trying to kind of function normally, but also having all your own anxieties and stuff. I think especially at the start of the pandemic, I think we forget how fucked up that really was, and how terrified we all were, because we didn't know what was happening. We never experienced things like this before. Now it's like a bit of a drill. We kind of, you know some of the things that helps, know some of the things that doesn't. You know, we know a little bit more, you know, although it's still a dangerous virus, we know a bit more about it and how to treat it. Whereas like at first, everybody was just like, what the hell is going on? And that was a really scary time. And when you were like trying to function, like, you know, expected to function normally. I mean, I've got friends who like work in hospitals, who work in supermarkets as well, who were just basically like, well, no, you're still coming in, you know, people working in supermarkets with no PPE going, well, no, you've still got to come into work. And, you know, it was just worrying about, you know, it wasn't just about me. It was like, I think I worried about every single person I knew, more than I would myself. It was like, well, what happens if this person gets it? What happens if that person has it? And I think it's not just the isolation. I think it's just seeing now a lot of the lack of empathy that we see in the country as well. And I'm not saying that of everyone. I know like there's people who've been like really lovely, but comment sections aren't places you should go when you're feeling a bit rubbish. Like they're really not. You know, people kind of talking about like really awful things that have happened to this thing, and then like, you know, several hundred laugh reacts on it. And it's just,
oh
like,
man, tell it, that laugh react thing is the den of bastards, isn't it?
It really is. It really is. And just like seeing that, and it's just like, this could have been an opportunity to kind of realize that the model we're living in isn't sustainable and change things. And I've realized just how many people don't seem to want that to happen. And yeah. I find it terrifying.
Well, what people do you mean? Like, what do you think of when you think like of those particular people? Is there a particular group or individuals? Like,
no, it's not, because it's, you can't pin it down. I think to try and pin it down to one particular group of people is to not really understand it. You know, it's not a case of people on either side of a political spectrum or, you know, a racial group or religion. You kind of see people everywhere, and different levels of it as well, you know. But it's just like kind of, it's the, oh, well, I'm sick of talking about this. Well, I am as well, but actually it's still here. And I understand that people just kind of get battle fatigue, I guess.
Like, oh, for real.
From what we've been in, and that's why they're saying they're sick of talking about it. But that's really difficult at the same time when you're trying to express your concerns about a particular thing. I think just having a conversation with somebody about, you know, about wearing masks, and having a deal with somebody who was giving me a completely unsolicited opinion about mask wearing when I was in a very public space. Yeah. This was the day I went a bit wonky.
Well, unsurprising.
And they were basically ranting about masks, and I don't think they work. But that's my personal opinion. And, you know, I'll be glad when I'm not wearing these masks tomorrow and stuff. And then started repeating like sound bites. And normally I would give somebody time, you know, with that. I might kind of add a few of my own comments, you know, just kind of do a, oh, let's agree to disagree sort of thing on this. And I literally just kind of stopped dead eye, turned around and walked away without saying anything, which isn't normally what I do. I did feel quite bad, but it was like something just died inside of me. And I was like, I don't want to have this conversation. I'm just going to leave now.
Better that than ragdolling somebody in Aldi, isn't it? It's like, when you get to that point, it's like, I'm going to rip your throat out and show you your gizzard.
It was in Wilko's, actually, wasn't it?
Was it? Even better. I mean, to be fair, Wilko's is well used to like that kind of thing. That one in Biker is just like, it's just on Shields Road. Sorry for people who aren't from Newcastle, but anybody who knows Shields Road, is it even still there? I don't even know, because I haven't been there because of the pandemic for a long time. But Wilko's and Shields Road, as I remember, was absolutely off. It's not great entertainment, but not so much good entertainment now, because you don't want crazy horses jumping over and giving you the plague, do you?
Yeah. So it was just last week was just a bad week where I just feel like everything came to a head, and now I'm just trying to like sort through the mess of that out and try and put everything back together again.
Aye.
I guess. I know we've talked about, you know, kind of talked about it lots, and I think it was. That was just doing that. Oh, yeah, I'm fine, though. People got it much. It's that very British. Oh, you know, somebody's got it much worse, haven't they? And being very polite about everything. And rather than just
saying, help, though, does it?
Everything is shit. Like, and I feel terrible. And I've like properly had enough. So that's where I'm at, really. What about you at the minute, though?
All of the things you just said, basically, those themes, like the isolation, whatever, and like just picking it up when the pandemic started. The election was in December 2019, and then we didn't have enough time, and then it was Christmas, and everybody just went, oh, it's Christmas, we're in the Christmas bubble, and then it was New Year, and then it was COVID, and then it was like lockdowns in Italy, and I was like, oh, God, that's all happening, and China, and it was all Wuhan, and the wet market, and all this crazy crap, and it wasn't really affecting us, apparently, and then realizing who was actually in charge and it becoming an existential threat, and realizing that we're the worst possible persons in charge at the worst possible time. That was kind of the start of it for me. And then obviously the isolation and everything that's went forward from that. Also as well, I'd suffered a bereavement, like, probably a year before, and I hadn't really been able to process it properly because I did go to counseling for it, but I just ended up talking about like other crazy shit that was going on in my life at the time, and I didn't really address the bereavement, so that was kind of overhanging, and then all of those are other aggravating factors, and then obviously just trying to maintain and get through the first year of the pandemic, and then I got ill, as I've talked about many times, and was like done in for another year right up until not so long ago, and hence here we are now trying to do this. The additional thing is winter. Like, I'm struggling at the minute. Like, I just need to feel sun on my face, you know?
Yeah, like, I know so many people that happens to. I don't think really I don't think I get that affected by it. I don't think like winter's like,
well, you're a goth, ain't you? So you wouldn't you all up in a dungeon in Whitby, mate. It's
that's the dream. no, but I do really empathise with it because I see that happen to a lot of people, and I think that's much more common than we realise, and that's really, really fucking unfortunate for where we live as well, the particular corner of the world, because it's not exactly the lightest place.
Harsh times, isn't it? And I'm taking vitamin D3, I'm taking like A to Z vitamins, I'm doing lactobacillus acidophilus for my gut biome, I'm eating well, I'm doing all the things, but the weather's been so terrible, I'm not getting as much energy, like exercise as I might need. So the trouble I'm having at night is I'm obviously grafting me bollocks off on this, as you know, and putting a lot of work into like skills acquisition and things like that, like learning editing and all of that, and it takes a lot of focus, but I've got three dogs and I'm doing it when my partner's at work. And it's really hard because they want more attention than I can give them, and then I can't like tire them out as much because some days the weather's terrible and there's not enough light, and then I'm working on something, you turn around, the sun's going down, it's like, shit, I've got all this still to do, and then I've got housework and all of this stuff we're just not designed to take on, you know, like it was never designed for two, like all the housework for two people working 35-40 hours a week to then have to do all that on top, and then and all of that just feels super overwhelming right now. Whereas I don't really feel that when there's more light, because I don't mind pushing the Hoover around when it's sunny outside. Oh, it's like that spring cleaning feeling. Speaking of that, a little bit of hope for you. It's the 1st of February today, which is the Imbolc, which is the halfway point between the winter and the summer solstice. So in the pagan calendar, this is where you start planting seeds, which you want to grow for the spring and into the summer. So it's good that we're talking about this today. Simply because I've been listening, obviously, to what you've been saying, my own self-talk, and certainly what people in the wider community have been saying. And I think we have to act. I think we have to like remodel something. And in the past, it would be like, let's all get together and we'll do some kind of event, or we'll do some kind of support group, or we'll like do a referral thing. But not everybody can do that. And, you know, we're speaking to Ronnie Lee last week, people with clinical vulnerabilities, it's not an option. So what we are going to do, because of the privacy side of things, we're going to run a monthly online support group. Obviously, using the technology we're using now via Patreon. So it's just an additional thing for existing patrons, and also something that people might want to become involved with. Obviously, there's a fee attached. It's less like £1 a week is the lowest Patreon tier. Now, I didn't like, obviously, if people like can't afford it, get in touch and well, I will work something out. We don't want it to be a barrier for people to access this thing. But at the same time, it does take time to put together and whatnot. So, you know, there's a balance there. It's an investment in us and yourself, and you get all the content first and all that. But that's a side thing. Mainly, it's about the fact that like Patreon's just private. And it needs to be private if we're going to like sort of talk about this stuff. Simple as that.
I think as we always, you know, say we can, oh, you know, we can do things more online, and certainly we can. I mean, you know, I'd like after we've done this today, I'm going to be talking to, you know, to my two best mates who are both kind of down south, one in Brighton, one in Stroud. And it was at the start of the pandemic, it was like, why have we never done this before? Actually, the technology was available then and we just never. And it's you know, really nice to kind of sit and have a glass of wine. But what I find, you know, that's in like, you know, using a, you know, a private sort of chat app or whatever. But things like Facebook, you know, kind of participating in groups, and people are like, oh, well, I can't really write anything there because my boss will see it. And it's just like, it's like your bosses and, you know, kind of people in your outside circle who, you know, have got like access to you at all times. And
it's wild, isn't it?
Potentially insight into your private life where actually they shouldn't necessarily be there. And it's not healthy. It's not healthy. Indeed. And people don't want to use those, you know, certain forums now because they're
well, that's one of the things that like happens with the peer. I don't want this to turn into some kind of infomercial. It's not that, but like we've got like a private forum as well. So if people like wanted to get support and post within the private forum, it cuts out all that stuff you've just mentioned, like people who you don't want seeing like your private business.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the main things I've got from becoming more active when we're talking about mental health on the Facebook page. And thanks to everybody for your contributions. I've really enjoyed this week and like last week as well. And I had a lot of anxiety around starting it again because social media was a huge part of what was like sort of triggering anxiety for us, you know. I've said this to you, didn't I? I got quite upset the other week where it was like, I don't know how I took that level of crap off people like constantly every day. And there was a bit of it last week as well. And it was like, what is wrong with you, man? Like, I'm literally a human being here. Like, I'm not your punch bag, you know? And I've realized how much that's like, it's just death by a thousand cuts. I mean, you know, I can take a lot, but God, death by a thousand cuts. I look back and reflect on how it used to be, particularly around the Brexit time, which was just vile, you know?
It was just vile. And I think for me as well, that the other thing I've really struggled with social media, I haven't come off it, but I've definitely sort of limited sort of how I use it. There's that side of things. There's the outright viciousness. The other thing I found really alienating for like how I'm feeling at the minute is the toxic positivity of social media. And, you know, it's
memification, you know, of recovery.
And actually, it's not all fluffiness and light. Life isn't like that. And it's not, you know, it's not just about kind of for myself, you know, and I won't talk for anyone else. I'll only talk for myself. But it's not just going, oh, you know, let's, you know, get rid of that. Let's get, you know, get rid of those bad feelings and replace it with positive affirmations. It's like, no, I need to sit with it. I need to acknowledge it. I need to understand it and just let it be for a little while. Mm-hmm. As long as I know how to keep myself safe and all the rest of that, which I do, I'm not just going to banish this entirely because it's there for a reason at the moment. And I kind of need some time to work through that. And that's as well as offered. I need to make this very clear now. I'm not anti-medication, but I was offered medication, which I turned down. I know that it's saved people's lives before, and you know, if somebody is taking medication and it's been beneficial for them, then fair play to you. I think that's mint. I've had really bad experiences with like antidepressants in the past. When I was a teenager, I was put on a drug that is now illegal to give to under 18s.
Wow.
And it sent me absolutely batshit.
Sounds lush.
Yeah. Like, it's, honestly, it was horrible. Horrible.
Just which one was it?
So I can't, it's one of the names is Seroxat. I can't remember what it's.
Oh God, I remember reading about that actually. There was a whole like lawsuit, I believe. I'm not really sure. I think there was, particularly in America, but I'd have to look that up. So don't quote us on this, you know. But I remember the Seroxat thing being in the news. So you were probably one of those kids, eh?
Yeah, I was one of them, and it didn't work out well for me. And it's kind of, I know there's other ones available, it's kind of always put me off. But my main reason for, because I would never rule it out in the future if I felt that it was needed. As I say, I'm not anti-meds. But I turned it down this time because this isn't a chemical reaction. I'm having a chemical imbalance. It's like, this is me reacting to the circumstances around me. And that's why I need to sit with it for now. And I need to work out what needs to change externally to do that, because it's not, this isn't something wrong with the wiring in my head. Well, there's plenty wrong with that, but that's, you know, the medication isn't going to fix that.
So what's your strategy like going forward? Like, I know you've spoken to your doc, like what's your fixer-upper type strategy, for want of a better word?
I think at the minute I'm resting. I think
good one. Important.
You know, thing. I would do that if I had the flu or something like that. And we're always really ready to kind of have lots of rest when that's happening, but not for our mental health. It's almost like we have to, you know, every 3 minute we have to be productive.
Burn that mentality. Yeah. It's not for us.
Set it on fire and throw it out.
Actually, I did an interview with a guy called Joe Ryle, who's a guy from the 4-Day Week campaign. It's one of the things that we're going to be putting out now that we've transitioned beyond our sort of dress rehearsal in January. We're going to start doing the proper promo campaign from now, basically. Actually, I'll just mention that. I'll bring it back in. I'm on a podcast tomorrow night. You Call That Radio, based out of Glasgow. People I've got a lot of time for. Your man Mark McGee, aka Jackal Trades, invited us on. I'm going to be on that tomorrow night talking about things like this, but also independent media and why it's a good thing. So shout outs to them, and I'll be putting a lot of stuff out on the social media on that. Sorry, you were saying, you just triggered a thing that I...
I'm really interested in that campaign as well. So I'm happy to hear about that. And I do think things like that might make life a lot better for people. It would certainly for me. I think it would for a lot of people. It's about that, the way we're being made to live. You know, the cost of living comes into all of that, which we talked about the other week as well.
Is the thing that what we're doing, it's not about like sort of having a whinge and all that. There's always some kind of evolutionary practical thing that we're trying to work towards, where we can hopefully include other people in that as well. Obviously this is like the nascent part of Cow Daily, the genesis of it and whatever, but with everybody's support, it'll grow and grow. And I mean, we've made some really brilliant links with other organizations too, like us, and stuff I want to share with you in the future about what that is and about how it'll help the growth. So thank you for being here at the very start of something that'll develop into something really beautiful. It's really appreciated. Like, what I want to say this to the people who've been here every week since the start, you've really helped us move through a certain part of the isolation. And that instant feedback that we've received from people doing this, where we've just been doing the kind of dress rehearsal month in dark old January, it's just been lovely. It's been like a beautiful thing. And thank you for all your comments, which seamlessly links us in to taking some comments from people. And I promise you, I wasn't doing that whole thing just to tee the comments up. But
no, I found it really helpful. I do every time. It's, you know, I enjoy spending time, you know, talking about this stuff with you as well. But it's, the comments have been great, and it definitely makes everything feel more like a community.
Indeed. And here's one. Hannah Buck. Hello, Hannah. How are you doing? positive thinking has its place, but it's also important to accept, as in deal with problems and work through them, rather than try and wish them away with happy thoughts and manifestations.
Yeah.
Word, homie, word. Like, it's important to think positively, but if it's not like alongside practicality and being able to filter the bullshit that like is in the, often in the Instagram like what like finding thread, then it can just become this thing where it, I think a lot of this positive affirmation shit, it's like it doubles down on people's feelings in a lot of way, because it's like, well, there's something wrong with me. I can't quite do this. You know, I can't, like, I'm following all of this stuff and it's not really scratching the surface. Oh, I'm fucked then.
We're also told to like neutralize certain emotions as soon as they come up. And I found this is why I really struggled with the whole toxic positivity thing when I was younger, and particularly anger. We tell men that their anger makes them abusive. We tell women that their anger makes them bitter and twisted and unattractive. But actually, you know, anger used in the right way, sometimes we use anger to make really positive changes in our life. You know, being able to be angry has helped keep me safe. You know, you can use it to finally feel like an absolute fucking injustice for something that has happened to you finally, rather than forgiving all of the time. It's all about the way you use it. Yes, anger can be all of those negative things that I mentioned, but not necessarily we can use it, and we shouldn't necessarily just try and quench its flames as soon as it arrives.
Totally, man. Another one. Jez Hunt, sounds like you got a good grip on this. Most of the time, Jez, but to be honest, I have some moments like when I necked a gang of whiskey the other Saturday, and then I had to come on here on the Tuesday, and I was rinsed this time last week, basically. Seriously, I was like throughout that show, I was holding on to this by my fingernails. Mm. It was like, I didn't feel like present when we were doing this. And I was saying to you afterwards, like, how the hell did we get through that? And it was like, it'll end up being the longest show we've done so far, like nearly an hour and a half. And I was like, wow, that was like, how did we manage that? But most of the time, pal, we've got a grip on it, and it's good stuff. And I think when we move forward and we're building community and we're building the monthly drop-in support group, coffee morning, whatever we want to call it, I think that'll really be something, not just for us, but like for everybody. You know, mm-hmm. I think it's a two-way street. Like, we're no different than any use, like, watching this now. Do you know what I mean? It's like we feel love, we feel hate, and we feel everything in between. And sometimes that's directed at us or not.
Yeah.
You know? So, it's...
Absolutely.
Dave Slaz, kimchi is magic belly medicine. Have you ever tried kimchi? Do you know what it is?
I don't. I've got a jar of it downstairs in the house because everyone keeps going on about it and I haven't opened it yet. I've got a bit of a thing about certain like food textures, and I don't know what the texture of it is, so I've been like really frightened to try it. Sounds ridiculous, but it's a proper like sensory thing. But I keep hearing good things about kimchi, so I'll get the jar open, Slaz.
Nice one. Well, I'll explain a little bit about kimchi. You know, I was saying I take Lactobacillus acidophilus, which is a good biome bacteria. Kimchi is a fermented food.
Yes.
And in modern diet, especially in the UK, we don't really eat very much fermented food. It was because when fridges came, like we don't need to store things in like airtight jars and that kind of thing. It's in the fridge. Excuse me. Oh, sorry, a little bit of windy pops, but I'm back in the room. I haven't been eating kimchi. That does actually happen when you eat it, strangely enough. But kimchi, it's got lactobacillus in it, another good gut bacteria. So that's why you would have that. You can get it in like Chinese supermarkets. It's like a Korean thing. It's often quite spiced. Also, things like Polish stuff, like sauerkraut, you know, the big stuff in jars. That's actually cheaper. I'm not sure if it works quite as well, but it does have the same kind of stuff in it. So do a bit of research into sauerkraut, because I think it's like a certain ones in certain, and maybe it's in brine or whatever, doesn't quite work as well. But fermented foods are things that we really need to have. Like, there's a milk one called kefir as well. That's like really good for you too. So something else to check out. Joanne G, I forget to take the stuff I've got. I think a lot of people do, mate. Yeah, there's a hand up there.
Really, really bad. Even if it's, this is another thing why I always do look for alternatives to medications, just because I can't remember to take it. It's, and you know, people go, oh, why don't you try this? Why don't you get a pill box? Why don't you do that? It's like, believe me, honestly, I've been there. I'm just a nightmare with things like that. Even if it's like life-saving medication.
True story, mate. It's a hard time, but like, you know, we'll get through it. And there's a load of good advice there for everybody, and that's what it's all about. So before we move on to the next section, please do consider becoming a patron and gain instant access to MTC's private chat forum, which we can talk about these things, and people might feel more comfortable like sharing some stuff in there. That's patreon.com/cowdaily for the audio listeners. And also, I'll be putting something out on the Cow Daily mailing list, link in the description. You'll be finding out about the things that we're doing first in the mailing list, and that's growing and growing. There's people signing up to that, and it's a fantastic and beautiful thing. Now, I'm not trying to spam people's inboxes. I'm keeping it down to like one email a month at the minute, because you know what it's like. You say, oh, it's that dickhead again. Will you sod off? Next to me, like dick pills and pornography, fucking password reset emails. I don't want to be known about him and his bloody touchy feely mental health groups and podcasts and shit. So once a month, at the minute, if there's anything like that else that needs to be said or needs to be done, then I'll spam you and I'll tell you about it first there. But I'm trying to get the balance right between like the Patreon, the Discord, the Facebook. I've put a bit of focus into the sort of writing on the Facebook stuff, because it's been really good to like reach out to people, and the algorithm just dies if you leave it for a year. So you've got to really put the work in to like build it. Same as YouTube and anything else. That's how they get you. They suck you in as a creator, and you've got to keep feeding the beast. And eventually they'll go, right, now you're allowed to see 10% of the following, and people are allowed to see it, because they're just trying to like make you buy ads and whatever. So if people could help by like sharing the stream and obviously sign up the mailing list, because it cuts out all these social networks and whatever. And the Discord forum, which is the private forum, it's like, it's a little bit like less algorithm heavy, and it's private, and it's our private server as well. So we've had trouble with like Facebook in the past, haven't we? And obviously I think we need to do like the whole Facebook breakdown, not on Facebook. So I'll leave that one right there. So thank you, everybody, for being here. We're going to move on. And the next thing we're going to move on to is this.
That is because, Mr. Speaker, the report does absolutely nothing to substantiate the tissue of nonsense that you have just spoken. Instead, Mr. Speaker, this leader of the opposition, a former director of public prosecutions, Mr. Speaker, who spent most of his time prosecuting journalists and failing to prosecute Jimmy Savile, as far as I can make out, Mr. Speaker. He, Mr. Speaker, gave the put in the library the house.
That's a bell end. Slagging off a bell end. But in the interest of good faith, you're laughing there. What's about Savile?
I'm laughing at Keir Starmer's face at the end.
Oh, man.
Just see, he's thinking, you fucking prick.
The eye of Thundera. He's like, he wants to stick him in a headlock, but I've seen him. You ever seen that video of him? Like when he was a boxing club, it was the most ill-advised thing ever. The man cannot punch. If you're going to try and win over the red wall, this like hairy ass, like hardcore bastard, like place. Don't ever give him any boxing gloves and pay people off to get rid of that video. He cannot punch. It's just like this. I mean, everybody's different and all of that, but like he's trying to give it this like strong and steely thing. Whoever advised him to do that, man, they must hate him, or they were trying to make him lose. What a nightmare. But in the interest of good faith, I mean, people know from following the things that are right, and obviously this, I detest Starmer, and I detest him for a myriad amount of reasons. But I did write this yesterday because I think it's important, and truth's important, good journalism's important, like, and we'll explore this as we go through this particular section. But this just like a little part of what I wrote yesterday. I'm no fan of Keir Starmer. In fact, I can barely say his name due to how much I viscerally detest him. However, Boris Johnson's comments in regards to Jimmy Savile are beyond the pale. There's no evidence that Keir Starmer was directly involved in failing to prosecute Jimmy Savile. Source for that is Reuters Fact Check. Reuters a news agency, quite reputable, as people might know. So a few points that I've pulled out just to illustrate what I'm trying to say. Starmer, the current Labour Party leader, was the Director of Public Prosecutions and head of the Crown Prosecution Service from 2008 until 2013. I think it was 2010 when the Savile stuff came out. On the David Icke Forum some years earlier, like, we can see even a stop clock tells the right time twice a day, but the Icke Forum was actually instrumental in making the papers report this, believe it or not. Right. A lot of the other stuff, the lizards and that, will not even go there, but whatever. Let's be in good faith. Starmer, he was not the reviewing lawyer in charge of probing the Savile allegations. The Crown Prosecution Service told Reuters in an email that there is no reference to any involvement from the Director of Public Prosecutions in the decision making within a report which I've linked from the Crown Prosecution Service on the screen. If you're on the audio, you're fucked, basically, and I'll stick the link in the description. So that is something that, like, my take on this is, right, and it's really simple, there's plenty to attack Starmer on, plenty, but attacking him on this is just scumbag city, and it's because of something called dead cat theory, and that the person who started that was something called Linton Crosby. We're going to do a little profile on him as we move forward so you can know your enemy. He's just been taken on as Starmer's main advisor, like the new Dominic Cummins, if you will, but he's got a lot of previous within the Tory party. Again, we'll come on to that. More on Starmer. So, Joseph Attard, who is a journalist and a Marxist as well, but don't hold that against him, crazy horses. He's done, I've pulled a few things out, a thread he did on Twitter. So in 2008, the Crown Prosecution Service refused to revisit wrongful convictions resulting from Mark Kennedy unlawfully infiltrating activist organizations by seducing members. Now, Alice, do you want to tell a little bit about that? Because it's relevant to the spy cops thing. And just before you do, we both did a podcast with Tom Fowler, who to me is a national hero, who's covering the spy cops scandal, and that'll be coming out very soon. Now we're in Imbolc and planting the seeds. Tell us, Alice, tell us more.
In short, what that is about is that Mark Kennedy was a spy cop, as we've talked about before. It's become quite apparent that during his time of deployment that he wasn't just like a bystander sitting back and watching what people were doing. By all accounts of pretty much everybody knew him, he was very much in the thick of things in organizing stuff, like trying to ambush get people to ambush the EDL on a counter protest rather than sticking to what their agreed plan was before. I'm very much acting like an agent provocateur, really.
You really can't do French, can you? Agent provocateur.
Agent de
Sorry, that's getting a bit xenophobic. Anyway, carry on. I'll send you souffle on Just Eat.
Yeah. And people were, people were arrested, people were prosecuted. And I think they wanted the CPS to kind of look at that, because if there was very much a police officer who was instrumental in organising and provoking those situations, then is it, it's not a fair conviction. Really, and it wasn't just Mark Kennedy, actually. There's been other spy cops.
There is, and I mean, obviously we've got to just do a whistle-stop tour of, like, these different sort of slides we've got on Starmer. Yeah. Because there's lots to attack Starmer on, just not on the Savile Nonce thing, because it's not his thing. It's not, he had nothing to do with it. And the dead cat thing is very bloody real. So let us pull the other thing up. Where's it gone? Honestly, this bloody thread thing, right? Yeah, we're gone. I'll add this to the stream. So in 2009, Starmer declined to indict officers who shot Brazilian immigrant John Charles de Menezes after falsely identifying him as a terror suspect. I had a little bit on this. For people who can't remember, it was just after the 7/7 bombings and everybody was keyed up in London. And Met police officers chased him. A few of them pinned him down and they shot him in the head. And I don't want to get into the detail of this because we just don't have time, but please use this as a primer and go and find out. So that was Starmer there. Also, another thing, Starmer authored rules to give police greater power to arrest demonstrators following 2010 protests. His successor described his legal advice as a collective loss of proportion and a denial of humanity or justice. Unsurprising for somebody who broke every single one of the 10 pledges he was elected leader on to become leader of the Labour Party. An additional one, CPS appealed a decision from a lower court to release Julian Assange on bail. Starmer advised lawyers from Sweden not to question Assange in Britain. Leaked emails show that when they expressed doubts about the case, Starmer's office replied, "Don't you dare get cold feet." That's the worst Starmer impression ever, but you get the point. He's a fucking bell end. So, Alice, my friend, what do you make of this? And why on earth is this not being said in the media? Because to my mind, journalism is dead. Carry on.
Oh, thanks for that. Statement. Well, first of all, going back to the Boris Johnson video, I don't know how he's got the brass nerve to talk about Starmer, you know, prosecuting journalists, you know, as if it's this big immoral thing. What should Starmer be refusing, you know, be arranging to have the shit kicked out of them instead, like he did, like he was actually recorded, you know, trying to have a journal. This is Boris Johnson, not Keir Starmer, for anyone who never heard that story, but tried to have a journalist beaten up.
And it was Darius Guppy, who's like an absolute wrong, and not to be confused with former Leicester City left winger Steve Guppy. Really sorry, Darius Guppy. But Darius Guppy was like a leaked phone call. I think it's still on YouTube, actually, unless it's been taken down by his ghouls, where he was basically trying to get him beaten up, saying, "Oh, can we break a rib or something like that?" It was really some dark business, you know what I mean? And he's kind of just blayed it off. Like, you know, and they go, "Oh, God, you know, it was unfortunate." And like, as Johnson does, and he gets let off the hook, doesn't he? He hasn't really had his feet held to the fire very much until recently. And it turns out Starmer isn't getting the same treatment as certainly not as Jeremy Corbyn. No. And it's something that I would like to play. And we could have chosen anybody from the media, like so many different people with a small amount who give Corbyn a fair crack of the whip. But I've chosen Nick Robinson, the BBC political editor, because this is from his show on Radio 4 this morning. This is him talking to Dominic Raab.
To say, not just Deputy Prime Minister, but Justice Secretary. The Prime Minister made an extraordinary and baseless allegation against Sir Keir Starmer yesterday. Without parliamentary privilege, would you repeat that allegation against Keir Starmer?
Look, this is the cut.
As a man knighted for his work, protected a serial sex offender, saying is the normal cut and thrust of British politics.
No, look, I'm certainly not repeating it. I don't have the facts.
Well, why don't you repeat it if the Prime Minister believes it? Why wouldn't you repeat it?
Look, I'm not repeating it. But one thing I would say, though, Nick...
No. Yeah. The Prime Minister of this country...
I don't have the facts to justify that.
Well, does he have the facts?
Well, that's for him to... be. But all I'm
does
saying
any
is
minister
that,
have evidence of what the Prime... But you are his deputy. Okay. Who else do you want me to ask?
Nick, you can ask me, and I'm saying I can't substantiate that. I think that the cut and thrust of exchanges between the PM and the Leader of the Opposition... Well, I don't think I would say that.
No. We're not going to move on from this.
No,
Mr.
I don't want to move on.
Mind.
I think it is quite right, though, as we talk about leadership, to look at Keir Starmer's...
Oh, no, let's not go
between
down
2008 and 2013.
No, we're not going to do that, Mr. Rob, because it's very obvious what you're doing. This is a
conviction rate.
This is a smear against a leading politician. And you won't distance yourself.
No, I
from
did.
It.
I just said that. I've just said.
Oh, you are distancing yourself
I've
from
just
the Prime
said
Minister.
I cannot substantiate that
Good.
Claim.
Okay.
What I'm also saying
so the
is.
So the Deputy Prime Minister cannot repeat words issued by the Prime
and
Minister.
And what I also said is the conviction rate for sexual offences and rape fell between 2000
and 2013. Which has nothing to do with what was said yesterday.
No, but it is to do, with Keir Starmer's leadership as DPP.
Let me just conclude by asking you this. So far, this scandal has damaged the reputation of politics, the reputation of the police, the reputation of the civil service.
Where was that energy between 2015 and 2019 from Nick Robinson and a myriad of other establishment client journalist ghouls? Why, he's obviously going after Dominic Raab, which is like Johnson's deputy.
Yeah.
But like, if this was Corbyn, God, just the mind actually boggles. How many people are showing their arse right now? Like, so many of these liberals. There was one today, Otto English, that wanker Ian Dunt, who has a really good rhyme and slang name, which accurately describes him, and loads of others. And it's so bloody obvious. They're getting this viewed left and right. Like, passing, like, that Otto English did the, from Byline Times, he did the, you know, that Black September, like, smear, where it was like Corbyn had like laid a wreath and all of this. He'd repeated it. And he came out with some like simpering, like simp machine thing about like, oh God, if you're repeating this smear about Starmer, then you're as bad as da da da. And it's like, it was, he got this you to bits with previous tweets about like repeating the Black September thing. What do you think that's done? Like, for millions of people living in poverty who've now got no hope of anything meeting their needs from like the Labour or the Tory party, because the Labour party are now back fully ensconced in the establishment, as evidenced by the treatment right there of Dominic Raab, because obviously Starmer is now the establishment's boy.
Yeah,
what you're saying,
and it's not just Rob. They did the same thing with Nadine Dorries, who was practically like staggering out, swinging a prosecco bottle at anybody who dared say anything against Boris. I
mean, she was mortal drunk.
She was so absolutely wild. Like, it was the
off
most thing. But you know, she was held to account. She was challenged repeatedly on, you know, and obviously they've, you know, Nick Robinson's torn Dominic Raab a new one, like on, you know, live on radio there.
Aye.
As you say, where was that before? That's what we've wanted all of the time.
I'll tell you where it was before.
And we've never saw it.
Look at this. Evening Standard. BBC's Nick Robinson embroiled in an impartiality row over Jeremy Corbyn tweet. Here's the tweet. No one should be surprised that Jeremy Corbyn is running be the establishment, and is long on passion and short on details. Story of his life. Is it really, Nick? You're not fit to lace his fucking boots, you daft Ian Dunt. I'm trying not to use that word because it can get you booted and it would be low-hanging fruit for opponents. But absolutely ridiculous stuff. Like, the BBC's always rattling on about impartiality, yeah. Like, where's the impartiality here? Where is it? Like, this is mild compared to a lot of what the other ones were doing. There's so many more I could have pulled out, but it would have been a 3-hour show.
Yeah.
Like, we can't. Sorry, you go ahead, mate.
It's absolutely maddening now, because they're when they're talking about the cost of living, when they're, you know, they're picking up all of these articles, and it's like, do you realize how responsible you are for us being in this situation now because of what you did? And I'm not saying that things under a Corbyn-led Labour would have, you know, government would have been perfect. They wouldn't have been. But I would guarantee there would be a lot less people dead now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can look at sort of like on balance, like with New Zealand and here, and I mean, Jacinda Ardern and Corbyn, they would have probably took the similar zero COVID approach. But you can imagine, like, the difference would have been the media. I read something like quite recently about New Zealand and how nobody really bought Murdoch media and like all this like right wing media, and they don't really have that much there. So she's got like, Not an easy ride. She's got like a properly journalistic ride, you know, and people are, you know, they're grizzling a bit now, but they've had it really good. And if you look at the deaths versus the deaths here, it's like night and day. There would have been far less deaths. There would have been far more families not riddled with grief now. And there would be far less people long COVID. And that's something that we haven't even really like got into yet. But we have done a podcast with long COVID kids as well, which is another one coming. Sign up to patreon.com/cowdaily. It's coming. So What do you make of our list, man? It's just madness.
I think I've been reading a lot about it recently, and I think as well. I mean, I remember it was bad, but I've been recapping like back on some of it. Like people have been sharing things that were, you know, that were put on particularly by the BBC in the run up to the 2019 election, and I think I'd forgotten on just how outrageous some of it was, like the backdrop of Corbyn with the Russian, the Russian landmarks and the hammer and sickle and everything like that. And it was just one of those is this real life moments. Like it was, they did actually do that.
Newsnight, aye. Have you seen the Voldemort one at the end of the Newsnight closing titles?
Yes, yeah, there was the Voldemort one as well. It was just that would have looked too much on a scene in the thick of it. If they'd written that as a scene, it would have been taken out because it would have just been seen as too ludicrous.
You've got the same people now just completely crying their eyes out because Starmer got savelled by Boris Johnson. You've got Dominic Raab in that clip there being absolutely raggle-danced by Nick Robinson and saying, will you repeat it without parliamentary privilege? But people who don't know, you can pretty much say anything you want in Parliament, right? Mm-hmm. And parliamentary privilege means you can't be sued. But outside of Parliament, if you repeat it, you can be sued. Also, as well, they've got the elites have had it sewn up for bloody over a century because you saw Ian Blackford was kicked out of Parliament because he refused to retract the fact that Boris Johnson's a liar because he is a liar. So the Speaker was getting all that. Lindsay Hoyle's a dickhead, man. Like, who the hell does he think he is? Like, but he's about as much use as a chocolate fire guard. He's like, will you retract it? Will you retract it? Go on, will you do the decent thing and retract it? Shut up, you plum. Will you do the decent thing and get him to stop lying?
But that's not the first time that's happened. We've seen MPs kicked out before for pointing out that somebody is lying when there is proof that they are lying. And it's not even the first time it's happened. But if you say that somebody's lying, that's like the worst thing that you can do. I just find Parliament surreal watching it. And for somebody, you know, it's like one of those things of if aliens came and they were watching, you know, you've got your people jeering at each other on either side. You've got the magic stick thing that they have, I'm not quite sure what that does, but it's seen as really important. And it's just the whole thing is absolute cabaret.
Bunch of bellends, lot of them. An absolute set piece of shit. It's mm-hmm. It's a laughing stock. It's an absolute laughing stock. It's not fit for purpose. And we need to reform Parliament you wouldn't even believe. But that's, a whole conversation for another podcast, I feel. One thing I would like to do before we move on to doing a little piece on Lynton Crosby and then finishing with the palate cleanser that is positive news is thank me pal Giggsy. I don't know whether you got wind of the fact that my head was up my arse and all that. And my partner's put a nice table. Hold on, I'll move that way. He sent us a load of cool stuff and I'm going to show you some of it.
Go on then.
Sent us some Palestinian olive oil, which I just was honestly, when I received this, I got properly my bottom lip started going. Giggsy, cheers, mate. He works for Tradecraft, which is a good old Geordie company, which was one of the first people who did, I think the first people who started Fair Trade. They're still going on the Team Valley and Gateshead and the do post internationally. And as you can see, they help with the Palestinian. This is the thing. You that can do nice. A lot of things for the Palestinians, but byproduct. The olive oil, he says it's lush, really nutty. Cheers, no, Giggsy, you're a star.
I've had Palestinian olive oil before. It is lovely.
Also, Zafar, I think it's called. It's a type of, it's a Palestinian, sort of herbal blend. You know, Ottolenghi. You seen the Ottolenghi stuff? Mm-hmm. There's loads of great recipes in the Ottolenghi book. I'm sounding like Ray Bell here. Really like the Ottolenghi cooking. It's Mediterranean style cooking. But honestly, it really touched us. And thanks so much. And please, if I'm not getting a commission for this at all, legitimately, he is my mate and he sent us this care package because my head's been up my arse, I think. And but I just thought I'd mention it on the stream. Get yourselves onto Tradecraft and order some of this. And I just like to point out, which is entirely unconnected, today Amnesty International released a report where they said Israel is an apartheid state. So I just thought I'd mention that.
This is like an anarchist version of Wayne's World.
Party. Fucking all tomorrow's parties. Then there's some like really cool teas he sent us as well. Green teas, lots of different teas. So nice. Cheers, Giggs. I love you, mate. I really do. And I'm really looking forward to seeing you in March, I think it is. Also, fucking eaten half of it, haven't I? 70% cocoa, fair trade chocolate.
Has to be good.
Really lush, that actually. So yeah, get yourselves on to tradecraft.co.uk. I think it's tradecraftshop.co.uk. Cheers, mate. Love you. Thank you so much. Really touched us and give us a lift on a really like dark day, both literally and figuratively. All the best. Shall we take some of the comments from the good people?
One in.
Let's go scroll down and have a look. What are you saying? What's this? Kent Page, that swan is staring at me. It is.
She's very judgmental, is Volterine. What's her name again?
You've forgotten the name, haven't you? You were just playing a game last week. You can't even remember the frigging name.
This is what I mean. This is like what's happened to my brain.
Brain fog.
Volterine dysnomia, hiss, hiss. She's very judgmental and she can break your arm as well. she won't. And she doesn't belong to the Queen either.
No, she belongs to the anarchists of the world and they won't eat them, unlike the Queen. Ryan Jones, hello, mate. Nice to see you. Watching Starmer and Boris in the Commons is like watching an episode of Super Nanny, where Starmer is some spineless parent who just stands there while their kid throws their own shit around the house. Ryan, that is absolutely brilliant. That's tremendous. What a great analogy that is, man. Isn't it? Go on, son. That's
amazing.
Bloody beautiful.
I think I'm going to frame that comment.
That is beautiful, man.
That's good.
Fantastic yes. crack.
But yes, agree fully.
Agreed fully. Hold on, I'm trying to work out how to remove the thing. The swan. Sorry, I've lost it a bit at that one. Like, that is just tremendous crack, that, like. So, as Jez quite rightly points out, they didn't do this with accusations against Corbyn. No, yeah. They didn't, mate. No, they didn't. And we all know why. Because he was challenging the establishment, which is now back in session, two cheeks of the same arse, Labour and the Tories, fully rearranging their deck chairs on the Titanic. Meanwhile, we've got 8 years to do something about the climate emergency. Meanwhile, millions of people living in poverty offered no solutions by either party. Here's the best they can hope for, that Labour will help 10,000 or 50,000 of them somehow, some way, and the rest of them can go burn, and benefits cheats and all of that stuff's going to get rinsed out again, isn't it? Fuck right off. But this is why we've got to start something new, which is an entirely different conversation. Just on the climate emergency stuff, there's a guy coming on. I'm going to do a pre-record next week. Some really simple explainers about the climate emergency, because I realise that even now, this late in the day, people haven't got a Scooby-Doo what we're facing. Like, we really need to just, like, I really need to feel like, well, the planet is about to, like, burn into a fireball. That at least we tried. At least we tried to do some stuff. So watch out for that one. It'll be released on Patreon first and then on all platforms after that as well. So let's do a little bit on Linton Crosby. So Linton Crosby is some kind of like ghoulish nightmare. So on his Wikipedia page, it says in a 2013 article for the Daily Telegraph, Boris Johnson noted that one of Crosby's tactics when losing an argument because the facts are against you was to do the equivalent of throwing a dead cat on the table. Bring up an issue that you want to talk about that draws widespread attention from the populace, forcing opponents to also talk about your new issue instead of the previous issue. So people say that a lot, Alice, like sort of the dead cat, or there's another dead cat on the table. He's the guy who started this, and he's an absolute bell sniff. Also, Crosby has been described as a master of the dark political arts, the Wizard of Oz, he's Australian, and the Australian Karl Rove. In 2002, he was called one of the most powerful and influential figures in the nation by The Age.
Which you always know when they say the most powerful and influential, like, really translates as he's a right bastard.
He's the worst, man. And, like, we've had so many of the worst of the worst. I mean, he's like Dominic Cummins squared. He's like, he's less sophisticated. I mean, he's the guy who, when Sadiq Khan stood against Zach Goldsmith for the London mayoral elections, he started all that Islamophobia, smears against him, which still plagues Sadiq Khan to this day. Now, I haven't got much time for Sadiq Khan personally. He's just another sort of careerist, Starmer type figure. But let's be truthful and honest. It's absolutely bang out of order and completely baseless what's been done to him. But these people have no morality, or they have a fuzzy morality which doesn't square with our own. And they create, like, sort of verbal tics and verbal memes which people pick up and regurgitate. He's the master of the soundbite, and Johnson's brought him in now to save his job, basically. So what are your initial thoughts on Lyndon Crosby?
I had heard of him, like, before we started talking about him. He was one of these people I didn't know much about. Everything I've heard about him is absolutely heinous. I think, like you say, he's, you know, from what I understand of him, he hasn't got any morals, but he does have an agenda. But I think as well, you know, when you hear some of the things that he's done, it's absolutely terrifying, because most people haven't heard of him. And that's not because those people, like, are ignorant, or that, you know, they're stupid or anything. It was the same for Dominic Cummins for a long time. A lot of people didn't have a clue who Dominic Cummins was until the whole Barnard Castle thing started. It was only if you kind of really, like, followed politics really, really closely that you might have had a clue who he was. But, like, Lyndon's another one where he's in the shadows, but he's very much...
I mean, people talk about cut through, don't they? Like there's the kind of, like, small percentage of the population who are just news junkies like us. And then there's, like, people who have a wider life, you know? So cut-through is when it gets through to the people beyond the news junkies.
Yeah, and he's in the shadows, but very much by being there, manipulating the light on what we see is what he does.
No, you're dead right. And we just wanted to sort of touch on it this episode about Lyndon Crosby. We haven't got time to go too deep. But, he's one to watch. He's been one to watch, and he's been one of these people who... has really fucked up the body politic and the discourse in this country. I mean, he was, like, on board with Cameron early doors, you know. And, man, it's something that I think we need to go deeper on. And we will get the opportunity to. By the way, Sir Lyndon Crosby, and it was Cameron who made him a sir. And there was a big scandal about it at the time, which, again, we don't have time to go into. But if you want to know more about that, these things were just intended as a small primer to... like, for you to go off and find things out yourself. Shall we have a palate cleanser to close the show?
Yes, I think we should.
It's positive news. It's positive news. That's not the theme tune. I'm actually going to make one, and I'm really, like, looking forward to doing it, but I just haven't had time yet. We're going to make a few theme tunes for all of these different sections, so it's, like, easier to edit, basically, but also have a bit of fun with it. Anyway.
And so you don't have to sing them.
True story. So, my friend, hold on, I pressed the wrong button. So, TUC, Trade Union Congress, vaccinations for NHS staff will no longer be mandatory after significant pressure from health unions. I personally consider that to be positive news, basically because I'm anti-authoritarianism. I believe that medical choices should never be mandated by the state. We shouldn't be told to put things in our bodies that we don't want to put in our bodies, like, on any level. You know, what are your thoughts on it?
I'm kind of mixed, actually, I've got to say.
Okay. Well, that's good. Tell us more.
I do agree. I do agree that I am against mandates, even though I've had all my jabs and everything like that. But then, you know, you do worry about people, you know, who might have somebody very vulnerable in a care home? You know, do, yeah, you, do you have a member of staff who's not vaccinated treating them? Do you get a choice in, you know, kind of saying, okay, well, I don't necessarily want that person treating me? I don't know. I find it really difficult. I am against mandates, and I don't want anybody to lose their job as a result of not getting vaccinated. But when you're working in health as well, it's like I do kind of worry about the reasons why. I know some people have got, some people can't, you know, some people will be working in the NHS who literally cannot get the vaccine, and you know, I absolutely wouldn't want them to lose their jobs. I know there was no kind of question of that. But yeah, it's I can see it being good news, but I can see some people being really worried about it as well. And I think discussions are needed about that.
No, I agree. I agree that discussions are needed. But I think for me, I'm just stridently anti-authoritarian. And it all feels like really like, well, why would that work? I mean, like, are they going to pin people down and inject them? I mean, at the end of the day...
Well, I think what you were saying is that you lost your job if you...
Yeah,
didn't
I was going to come on to that. I was being a bit facetious, really. But like, which is unlike me, of course, the facetiousness. But I mean, this is the thing. It's like, it's as good as, because, you know, you've worked hard, you've qualified, you've done this, and you now having to leave your job. Well, now it doesn't look like that's the case. So, well, it's not the case. You know what I mean? So I do consider that, but I do hear you and I do take your point. And look, I'm not clinically vulnerable, I think. So I will hear and listen to everybody's opinion and be challenged on it if need be, and possibly change my view. Next one. This, I thought this was great. Graham Robinson posted this actually on Facebook. It's from something called Ancient Forgotten Knowledge. I don't know what that is. But when you eat fruit, do not throw seeds in the garbage pipeline. Must be an American thing. Wash and dry them. Put them in a box and leave it in the car. When you are on the way, throw them through the window in places where there are no trees. Nature will take care of them itself. In Asian countries, this practice has existed for centuries. That's why now their fruits grow everywhere. What do you think of that?
I didn't know that their fruits grow everywhere as a result of that. I think you kind of see a little bit of that in this country occasionally, actually. There's definitely places around the Northeast where I've just like seen some like random apple and pear trees like growing, and it's blatantly been like from where like an apple core's been like thrown out of a car window. There's a really good apple tree near me actually, which is blatantly been as a result of that, and it's always quite nice to see there.
Nature is healing.
Yes, nature is healing.
There's also this movement called Feed the Birds, where people are planting cannabis seeds in like council potting things where the flowers are. So like, don't, whatever you do, do that.
Well, I think this is maybe, and it certainly wasn't from her doing it, but I think my mum over the summer ended up with like a massive cannabis plant in this tiny patch of dirt in her backyard, like in the middle of a really like rundown like urban area, and she just didn't know what the hell like was going on. And like when it first started growing, we were both like, I was like, yeah, nah, that's not what it is. And honestly, it just got bigger and bigger and bigger. It's not there anymore.
Look at this Jez Hunt. They've thrown seeds out their car windows for centuries. Yes, China has always been a really advanced society. Forget Henry Ford, man. The Chinese cars are the boys.
I'm really embarrassed that we've needed an actual historian to point that out to us.
I'm not embarrassed. I've been pretending not to be dumb for centuries, because I've been alive for centuries. Cheers for that one, Jez. What a buckler. Anyway, last one for the positive news for this episode. Ding, ding. Independent. Portugal election. Socialists win third general election in a row with surprise outright majority. Portugal went to the polls 2 years early after snap elections were called last November. I'll talk a bit in the future about like my connection to Portugal and whatever. And what I would say is it's centre left. It's far to the left of the Labour Party in the UK. And these, like, some of the policies that they've got are great. They're about to get a lot of like EU money to like a sort of pandemic rebuild fund or whatever it's called. So it's, I think it's something like 16.8 billion euros. So these are the ones that are going to be implementing that and spending that, which obviously is, it would suggest, rather than what would have been the equivalent of the Portuguese Tory party if they'd got in. Here's what could have happened, right? And this, there's a party there called Chega, which is basically far right. And there's a guy called Ventura who styles himself a little bit like Nigel Farage. He's like, and he's got so much airtime on Portuguese TV. It's ridiculous. Much like Nigel Farage having a season ticket for Question Time in the UK.
Yeah.
He's also, I mean, Portugal had in recent history for a lot of the 20th century, a fascist dictator called Salazar. So what could have happened is the Portuguese Tories could have got in, and then they may have done a coalition agreement with Chega and Ventura. So before this election, Chega had one seat in parliament, but they have grown and they've now got 11 seats in parliament. So this is great news, but it's something to keep an eye on. Populism is growing, and populism tends to grow in human history around times of uncertainty, like after a war, obviously as you emerge from a pandemic, hopefully we're emerging from it, let's see. And it's something to be aware of. Ventura is a dickhead, man. He's a dickhead. But anyway, positive news. The socialists did get in and they're going to be spending the EU money. Just on that, though, the UK is not in the EU anymore, so there'll be none of these billions and billions getting spent because it ain't coming. Jez Hunt, I've got to do this one as well because he's on top form tonight.
Let's have a look.
Salazar sounds like an evil necromancer. killing the comments game tonight, Jez. That's amazing. Absolutely fantastic. Thank you everybody for being here. We've overrun a little bit, but I think it was worth it, you know.
Yes, I would like to apologize to my two best friends who were just trying to ring me there.
Sorry, your two best friends.
Time management is a thing with the ADHD mind. So
that's the one, definitely.
I'll be with you shortly.
So if probably you could please subscribe to the Cow Daily YouTube channel. If you could do that playlist thing we mentioned where you like set it away and play it, it's going to help immeasurably. Yeah. If you want to get involved and help support Cow Daily as it grows and goes on, please become a patron, get instant access to Milk the Cow's private chat forum for Cow Daily, private, of course, patreon.com/cowdaily. And obviously sign up to the mailing list as well, because we will be informing you about the monthly support group that we're going to launch hopefully this month, if we can pull it all together in time around all the other tasks. So I think it's important and it's very much needed. Alice, you're a scholar and a gentleman.
Thank you.
No problem. Thanks for being here. Thank you everybody for tuning in again this week. Much appreciated. Your love and kindness is always a beautiful, beautiful thing. Any final thoughts there? Orko? We'll go with Orko.
Bonjour, everyone.
Bonjour, le class. Alice is off for a souffle on Zoom with a freundlich. That's German. Bye, everybody.